Hello and welcome everyone to a very special, a very live, and a very visual episode of MTG Potpourri number 25. It is totally visual. This is not just, you know...
You can't drink during the intro.
And eyes.
What? Put the drink down until after the intro. You have a job to do, Tom. You're already drinking. Put it down.
Do I need a drink?
You
can drink all you want. You're not giving a monologue right now. Put the drink down and finish your monologue.
Diet cherry Dr. Pepper waits for no man. It needs to be drunk fresh and cold. So, ergo, I'm drinking my diet cherry Pepsi right now.
Yep, that's what we all call you here. It's diet Dr. Cherry.
That's Tom Gustafson in a nutshell, folks.
Yeah, thank you. So, everybody, this is MTG Potpourri. We are an actual quasi-magic podcast that records on... I'm not even sure, a monthly basis? It might be more. Conley has reinvigorated my love of podcasting solely by doing this on video. This is phenomenal. Because we used to do... Conley,
I feel like we have such...
What?
Go ahead. You go ahead. Go ahead.
I think you were still doing Monday Night Magic with me way back when we would do like the big round robin kind of gang style Skype video calls.
Yeah.
And I would be, Conley has a much nicer room than I remember there. And Tristan Tron Gregson was even joining us. I remember he'd be like podcasting by his fridge. So you'd like see him just reach behind himself and get a drink. I live for that.
Oh, sure. I wasn't on too many of the video ones because I like left right as you guys like started the video ones.
Yeah.
I did a few with you guys.
Yeah. And then I think I retired maybe just a few months after that. But you're hearing other voices. I'm seeing other handsome, manly faces. I have two co-hosts with me. I have Conley Woods.
Hello, everybody. I don't see when do they see my face? Right now, all I can see is your face. I don't know what these people are seeing.
No, that's gonna be half the magic.
Oh, your video just cleared up like 10 times though.
Yeah,
it was like super blurry, and it just like.
Yeah, God knows. There's other people in my household that can be using the internet, so who knows what's happening to them.
Fair enough.
Bloods might be on and being streamed.
We have a third silent partner of the podcast, so it's a very...
Speak up, Adam. I got a Honeycrisp apple here waiting for me.
I wasn't silent.
Eating an apple on the air?
I'm not eating. I'm not going to actually eat. I'm just showing it to you, and this is what it looks like when your toddler steals it. What? I could be worse. I could be having a Tootsie Roll Pop right now. They're downstairs, cherry-flavored and amazing.
That sounds suggestively amazing. I'm Adam Sworsky. Everybody knows that. Nobody knows that. I don't know who knows what anymore because of you, Tom. You've ruined everything that I know.
Do you want me to get smush?
No. I'm going to go get the most ridiculous beer I have that has a cap and a cork, and I'm going to open it just for you.
Oh, we could do live taste testing. I could get some Orbitz.
You don't get to taste test it, Tom.
Look how happy I look.
You're on the other side of the country still. The internet and Google Hangouts does not change that.
We are in a flyover Midwest state, so we are about the last for stuff to plop into our worlds.
All right, I'm going to grab that beer, and I'm going to be right back, and it's going to be awesome.
All right. Bye. Conley, while Adam, I'm hoping comes back with pants on with his little adventure.
I am just drinking pure vodka water. No, just one.
Oh, so that sounds horrible. So, I guess Adam will be coming back, but we are on the cusp of having basically the entire Dragons of Tarkir spoiler. And
we are 157 cards deep.
Jeez, yeah, that's crazy.
And no, 120. Wait, let me double check. 127.
It's probably constantly changing at this time of the day because we are recording what now on what happens to be a Thursday night, and we should have the entire spoiler tomorrow. So we're picking a really good night to podcast.
A great night to podcast.
But we usually have most of the gas cards are already out by this point, so usually it's not a bad time to talk about it. And O'Connor, for you, when doing set reviews, do you start on those as soon as previews start coming out, or do you wait till the whole set is there?
It depends on the cards. I like to be informed with kind of how they play. So if it's any type of card that I have any question about, like a new mechanic, for example, or a certain piece of removal, something interesting, I will actually wait till after the pre-release and actually have gotten a chance to play or seen it played. Before I give it a rating. Not necessarily rares and mythics. I'll take a guess on those because you're not going to always have a chance to see them, but at least commons and uncommons. Of course, like a lot of this stuff kind of fits falls into place when you're thinking about it conceptually. You're like, this vanilla creature is going to be good for these reasons, because morphs in the format, this shock's going to be better than it would otherwise, and you can rate a lot of stuff without ever having played. But I generally like to play a little bit with the cards before I finish rating the entire set, because it really does give you a better idea. So I'll write some amount of my review before the pre-release, but I would say the majority of it is after the pre-release. So I'm writing it like literally like I'm submitting it at 11 o'clock at night, and it's going up at 6, 7 a.m. the next day. Like that's every single day of the week, because I want to get it as like fresh and new as possible. But it does require a lot of writing, because these are 5,000 or 6,000, sometimes 8,000 long reviews every day. So you're writing like for, you know, 10 hours straight, basically. It's kind of frustrating, but it's worth it in the end, usually. Sometimes you get pooped on.
And but I have a couple questions for Conley about, you know, maybe Brian's review is different, but I see Adam has his hand on the top of a mysterious beverage and needs to open it and drink it on air. Because that's apparently what we do on this podcast now.
It is absolutely what we do on this cast. You know what? This is just it's a lambic beer. It's not actually the one I wanted. It's like Belgian peach beer.
I hate two out of the three words you just said.
Lambic is from a specific region.
Belgians and peach.
Belgium. As far as I'm aware, I'm just going by what like the guy with like the weird hair and the glasses at the beer store told me.
Oh, okay.
But basically, it's a sour beer, so it's tart, has a sourness to it, and that's based on the yeast and how it's made and prepared.
I admit I'm not my beer snobbery goes to an MGD 64. So like, what would you drink a bitter sour beer with? Like what?
I don't know. I don't know pairings or any flavor profiles like that. What I do know is like a good comparison is like imagine let's say Miller Lite is like skim milk, right? No flavor, no substance. like a really great beer, like maybe or not even a really great beer, but like a kind of like a very popular craft beer, a formula craft beer like Boston, like Sam Adams Boston Lager would be like whole milk. You know, everybody knows what it is, and it's definitely richer than like Miller Lite. This would be like a buttermilk or like a yogurt. Just a very like same type of thing.
It's the worst thing I've ever
heard. I am disgusted. Weird drinks of bitter, bitter goat yolk.
So you got your cottage cheese over here, right? That's like your vodka and your rum and stuff. And then over here, you have your Swiss cheese. And that's like, come on. I already have no idea where you're going with this, Adam. You just literally went from skim milk to yogurt on the same palate. Like, I understand they're technically made with the same thing. But nobody goes, like, nobody has that on the same scale. Like,
milk goes whole skim.
2% chocolate, and you're done. That's it. Maybe strawberry if you want to be stretching it. You don't go to yogurt.
let the yogurt drinker speak here. I want to hear it.
All right, yeah, this is like a buttermilk. Then it has a very different flavor. It has some sourness to it. It's kind of like that. I don't know how to compare it. I don't have the words here.
I see a snuffleupagus.
It's a viewer who came from Tom's Link. It's great.
Yeah.
Hello.
I didn't realize
other people are allowed to have non-webcam things. I get it.
And we can see what he says. He smiles. Or she smiles. I don't know. It's Snuffleupagus.
Oh, cool.
We're all imagining
it's Snuffleupagus. Dude, Snuffy was my favorite growing up, dude. I had a Snuffy doll. Snuffy was the noodle.
It's your noodle.
Bigger could suck it.
Is noodles not sexual, I hope.
No. This is a noodle. Okay. You watch my videos and stuff. I call things the noodly boodlies all the time. It's just like a thing for like good.
Oh, okay. I read the articles. I mean, I don't watch the videos.
You know what, Tom? You need to have some things changed. Okay. We need to have some lifestyle changes
while I drive to work.
No, we need to set aside 2 hours of your day and watch my videos, please. Thank you.
All right. Well, I didn't realize when I posted the link that people would hop on, but Kai, we're happy to have you. And yeah, post up any questions, because we did go from 3 viewers to 1 viewer after Adam's cottage cheese drinking comparison. I'm just saying. So Adam, if you were to pick the cottage cheese of the Dragons of Tarkir spoilers, what would that be? And I'm going to pick Swiss cheese, and Conley's going to pick the string cheese of the set.
All right, I think the cottage cheese is hands down Culligan's Command. I think it gets a got a real bad rap when it got previewed. I think people expected a lot more out of it, especially after seeing Ojutai's Command and now seeing Dromica's Command, which is another incredibly powerful card.
That one's so amazing.
Yeah, so I think it's getting a lot of kind of like push downward pushing. But from a commander player standpoint, that type of card is just incredible. It does everything you want in a black-red deck.
Well, it's Blightning.
The fact that it instant speeds. Well, it's not Blightning. It's like 60% of Blightning. So, like, if you're using the Blightning modes, you're probably doing it wrong in multiplayer. So I can't speak for Constructed, and it may have some applications there. I feel like between Thoughtseize and Duress, those are going to be your go-to hand answer cards. Like, you want to choose what they send away, or, like, you're using discard to selectively manage the threats that your opponents you anticipate they're bringing. Just telling them to discard a card means nothing, really, especially with reanimation decks. But the thing that I really like about it is that it's instant speed, get a creature back to your hand, which is one of the very few narrow ways to actually rip something back from the graveyard in response to, like, a mass exile effect or in response to Living Death, and you don't want to, like, dump it on. It's getting, I think that effect alone is really powerful in Commander. And the other modes have applications. Like, you're always going to have an artifact to shoot down. I just really like that card, and I think it's way better than people give it credit for. Your turn.
You're just going to sit there and smile contently. That's how you close your argument. You just do... first of all, I would say it's way more than 60% of Blightning. Like, dealing 3 damage to a player, while there were some decks that wanted that mode a lot, like, dealing 2 damage to a creature is a significant amount. Or making a creature, which is a good.
You've got a bad case of the robots, family.
What? I sound like robots?
Yeah, you're sounding fine now, so yeah, just roll with it.
Oh, okay. I don't know what I did. Even though it is not necessarily as strong as Blightning, the things it can do are much more versatile and stuff, so I would give it like a 75% of Blightning rating in terms of power level. I think that card is like legitimate, and Blightning was basically overpowered, so in terms of like that level effect in Standard, just because of how well they scaled in terms of drawing two. But I don't know. This command seems like very, very strong just because of its versatility, if nothing else. I would say it's actually potentially stronger than the white-green one because the white-green one is going to have a very niche type of deck where it goes into like the mid-range, aggressive green-white shell, like the deck that we've always seen. You're not going to see some random control deck packing the green-white charm or the green-white command, while they very easily could run the red-black one because it has modes that they could take advantage of. We might actually see the red-black one seem significantly more played than the green-white one just because of versatility alone.
And I was kind of curious for both, Conley, for both you and Adam, as being more competitive players. I get confused, and I'm more of a casual player. Like, how do you guys approach like drafting this set when it seems like it's such an odd mix of these very large, expensive flying creatures than all the other cards. How does that affect you valuing cards, especially when you're going to be drafting this with the other, Tarkir sets? How do you approach that when you have sort of this weird, oddball third set?
I mean, I wouldn't call it like a weird oddball third set because it pushes out Concerturk here, right? So basically, this is like the new base that fills up. You're seeing two of these packs. You see them after Fate Reforged, or before Fate Reforged, I should say. So the thing that, we don't know enough about the set. We haven't seen how it looks yet to really say, this drafts this way or this drafts that way, but the fact that there's such a big allied color focus means that you're probably looking at mostly allied color decks, perhaps splashing an enemy color if you're setting up for like one of the Fate Reforged synergies, like the cycle of commons that are enemy colored. But it just seems like the colors are going to naturally divide out. Like if you pick like 7/6 drop dragons, like you're not going to cast them all. Like your deck's just not going to work. So you're not going to be fighting for the big splashy expensive dragon rares, like at common, uncommon and rare. Like you're going to be looking to fill out your deck with the same stuff that you do in any other limited format. Like you're going to be looking to make sure you have 2 drops, 3 drops, 4 drops, that you have removal to use. Like I don't see anything about the set that makes it significantly different in like a, like a how you'll draft it sense. Like, it doesn't feel like a Battlecruiser set, right? This isn't Rise of Eldrazi, where, like, you're looking to set up 10 mana, you know, call of the stupid overlord dudes. It's like, okay, you know, did you open a really awesome 6-mana dragon? Great, maybe you can draft a deck around that.
It might not be Rise of Eldrazi, but it very easily could be Avacyn Restored, like that same format, where, like, the big dude deck is a thing. Most decks have a big dude or two, and there's these super powerful uncommons that take over games, but aren't necessarily always good. I mean, there's nothing as strong as this, the stupid green 4/4, whatever that guy's name was, the most powerful uncommon ever. I hate that card. There's nothing going to be as strong as him, but still, there was like some standout uncommons, and then the rares were like unbeatable, and that's one thing I'm a little worried about in this set, is just that the rares are extremely strong and limited, just as they were in most of the block, I would say, but the rares in general in this set are stronger, both for constructed and limited. So you're going to have that kind of sealed effect problem that'll even kind of bleed over into draft. And I think there's a decent amount of removal, so it won't be as bad as Avacyn Restored, where you couldn't kill these things. But I could still see a lot of games being won by these giant dragons, even if they're not like all about the dragon the whole game. They're still going to be finished off by this giant thing coming in that has hexproof randomly or something like that, just because there are so many at rare and mythic that are game ending that opening one or getting past one is not that not going to be that uncommon. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you're going to have people fighting this by trying to draft the super aggressive decks, the black white warriors decks and stuff like that. And I think those strategies are going to be just as viable. I don't know, kind of a make out, like an 8-man pod, like how many aggressive decks there will be, how many control decks, but the format does look like if the rares don't skew things too much, that it could be relatively diverse, which is always something nice to see.
Yeah, one of the lead co-developers, Dave Humphreys, I got to talk to him a little bit at PAX, and he also was one of the lead developers for Avacyn Restored, and was keenly aware of kind of the Avacyn Restored issue. So, I mean, just the fact that Fate Reforged is in there, and there's basically like a great cycle at common for removal,
yeah.
You know, in mono, you know, in one for each color, like, I think that sets a lot of the tone, where even if, like, you don't see, like, there's just a lot of great uncommon removal in Dragon's Tarkir from what, you know, at least I've seen so far, but even if, like, you have to wait until Fate Reforged, like, you know, you're going to have Salt Blasts and Bathe and Dragon Fire to snap up.
All right, I want to hear some hot
Reach of Shadows and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Hot picks. Give me the noodle combat. Noodle the Dipple. Or
all right, don't ever. No, that's you don't own that one. You
noodle the Nipple. Why adapt to the noodle?
What are we picking them for? Constructed picks.
Wherever you want. I have my pick. I'm holding. Well,
then go lead with yours and give us some time to establish our own picks instead of just dropping it on us like a hot sack of doo-doo.
For what I love is kind of oddball cards that don't fit well into previous archetypes, and that is Scion of Ugin. Because it's not often that I get a colorless creature that's not a goddamned artifact. So since Eldrazi, I have a creature dragon spirit that just has no color. And it's a 4/4 flyer for 6, which is not terrible. So I would, hopefully at some point I can make a completely colorless deck that truly doesn't... It's not even just artifacts.
That's the card you picked?
Yeah, I was excited. I was like, I have Ghostfire, and I have Scion of Ugin.
Shitty, boring vanilla cards that have no substance to them. You say 3 sentences about it, and you seem like a genius because you picked your card and moved on, and you just stick me and Adam and come up with all the tough ones. What is up with that? You picked a 4/4 flying vanilla creature.
Every other good
Luminous Gargoyle already existed, Tom.
I just like, because I see like Conley's thrashing around his room, and Adam...
Adam's getting drunk. He's smart.
Adam's just thinking about Puka Trade. He's just like, mwah.
I've got my next card ready. What are you waiting for? Should I go again? You got one, Conley.
Sure, I'll go. I'm looking at my screen. I have a bunch of things I can talk about. I'll talk about the control cycle of... I assume it's going to be a cycle. But the control dragon cards. We have Opportunity, and we have Counterspell. Except both are dragon themed now, and you have to reveal. Well, you don't have to, but you get the option of either revealing a dragon from your hand or having one in play. And if you do, opportunity can't be countered. It is literally opportunity otherwise, in case you were curious. 6-mana draw 4, instant speed. But it can't be countered if you control dragon. And then the counter spell is technically, it works a little differently than I made it seem. I believe it is counter unless they pay 1 for blue-blue. And then if you reveal a dragon or have a dragon in play. Oh, no, wait. This one doesn't let you have it in play. This one you have to have it in your hand, which is kind of weird.
No, with Silvergrove Scorn, you can't have it.
Oh, no, I see. It's in the second line attack. Yeah, I see. So yeah, if you have a dragon in play or from your hand, then it becomes counterspell, blue counter target spell. So like both of these cards are absurdly powerful in their dragon kicked forms, but also quite playable in their not dragon kick forms. And I would not be surprised if both of these cards saw heavy, heavy amounts of play, especially with control, like constructed viable dragons running around already. Silumgar being a good example of the hexproof one. Even the new one's fine, the one that steals things. But I would be very surprised if both these cards were not heavily, heavily played in constructed. And, I mean, they're both fine limited cards, too, so they're going to be turned on a lot of the time.
Yeah, I want to make sure things are turned on all the time.
Yeah, I'm sure you are, Tom. I'm looking at you right now. I can't not be turned on.
I got magic. I'm almost out of Cherry Dr. Pepsi.
Oh, you played wrong, Tom.
You're drinking like a straight wine bottle, Adams, what it looks like.
I know, he's just every time he just cut over.
Oh, you guys are...
It's just one pint, 9.4 fluid ounces. Like, why do they have to mix and match?
2 liters? I don't know what that means.
You're just going to cut to me next, and I'm going to be on a bong over here.
No, he'll have the box of friends.
To Tom, he's loading a gun with his child in the background.
Load faster, damn it. My kids, I'm safe shooting. They only do musket. They only do musket loading.
Oh,
tamping it down. Mm-hmm. Powder horn.
Very safe. That's why it's been preserved all these years.
Hot picks.
All right. Well, I really like one of the rare dragons. I guess I'm just stuck on red-black. I'm just kind of fascinated and really want to jam that right now. It's a Boltwing Marauder. It's the 5-4 for 5 flying dragon. And whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, target creature gets +2/+0 until end of turn. And this is one of those guys that I really think it's... Has some interesting uses. I mean, obviously in like draft or sealed, like if you're curving out, especially if you have like a 5/4 dragon that you can like pump up with +2 or +4 on a turn, you just get to punch through a bunch of damage and close out games quickly, which is obviously a pretty consistent plan for red black. They're going to have dash and both sets are that are in draft, so you're going to have lots of opportunities to dash a guy out, like dashing heel cutter and dealing an extra 2 damage too, just as gross. But where this guy I think really shines is something like a tokens deck. So like you cast like Dragon Fodder into Whirling Outburst, and suddenly you're doing +4/+6 damage, you know, with some other dude the turns you're casting those spells. Just turning creatures that may not survive to the next turn to attack into damage now is a really great way to mitigate the opportunity cost of casting a creature that can't necessarily attack right away. I don't know that there's a constructed application necessarily, but I know for Commander, which I guess is constructed, but the decks that already run like Ogre Battle Driver and Web of War, those effects that give +2/+0 in haste, this is basically an effect that stacks with all those cards, and you start putting these together and you just deal a ton of damage out of nowhere, and I love those types of swingy effects.
And his one, he's and 5 mana for a 5/4 flyer already is not bad. So it's
this is a card that I would happily first pick. And see if I can go in on red black. You know, I'm going to really enjoy using it.
Oh, in limited, this guy's insane here.
Yeah.
Snap this guy up.
Yeah.
Let's see. From my set, this is one you guys may
Tommy,
have
heard. Tommy Boy.
This is what I'm just curious about. Even though I hated Doran when Doran was out, Assault Formation has me a little interested, because I tend to like to play janky decks with Defender, Walls. So you have Assault Formation, so green and colorless, it's an enchantment. Each creature you control assigns combat damage equal to its toughness rather than its power. And I like that a green target creature defender can attack this turn as though it didn't have defender. And why not give it 2 and a green, creatures you control get +0/+1 until end of turn. I don't want you guys.
Ass alt formation, man. It's all about the ass.
It is a big flying booty dragon.
No, it's about toughness, Tom. Get your head out of the class. Talk about toughness.
It's in the gutter castle, man.
I don't know why you brought booty dragons all of a sudden. That seems a little extreme. But, I mean, you know, one man's flying mythical beast is another man's porn. It's fine.
We've already gone in on Monday Night Magic to my respect of Rosie O'Donnell. And we won't go down that whole thing again about the somebody could be more than the sum of their parts and pieces.
We are not going to talk about Rosie O'Donnell anymore. No, this card is, I don't know, it has a lot going on. I kind of wish it had been a little bit less, just because this is the literal second time we've, I mean, I guess maybe Rolling Stone counts, I don't think so though, but this is basically the second time ever we've seen this effect. We saw it on Doran, which was cool. A 3-mana, 0/5 legendary creature with that ability was awesome and sold itself. And now we see it in a monocolor. So it's like, okay, well, why was Doran white and black? I have no idea. Because this card really tells us that this was a green ability. And then it's the second time we've ever seen this ability. It's not on a creature. So it's kind of got all these unique things already going for it. And then they're like, throw on this thing about defenders attacking. And you're like, okay, Rolling Stones thrown on there too.
Yeah.
That's another white ability that is now green for some reason. So now we're just chucking that on there.
I'm going to give you that. Okay.
And then they're like, and let's jam this random ass pump ability for 3-mana on the button. Like, that last line of text just makes the entire card look gross to me. Like, I just wish it was not on the card. If you're building around this, you are already putting the big toughness things into your deck. You're not like, oh, what am I going to do with my 0/7s? Make them 0/8s. that's not where you go with this. Like, if you're the guy that wants to play with this, you're already jamming your wall of shards into your deck. You do not care if they're 0/9s. I promise you. So just get rid of that last line of text. You have a beautiful, elegant, awesome card. Instead, you cluttered it up and made it asshole formation. End of rant.
I'm just trying to remember my...
Also, Watsy, this is what Watsy gets for not hiring me. Instead, I work for a competitor and I pick apart their cards.
But where is it? We're a glyph of... What is my really janky glyph from... A glyph of destruction. Oh, that gives it power, not tough blocking. Okay, damn it.
Oh, the red one?
Yeah, the glyph of destruction. I couldn't remember if it gave it +10 on power or it was +10 on... toughness for walls, but it was power, so never mind.
Yeah, it's power. It's power, yeah.
Okay, Adam, what is your next hot... What? Now is my hot pick. Who's up next?
It's you, Tom.
What? I just did the booty dragon formation. That was mine. I'm really digging green in this set. I mean, I could pick a number of green cards I think are kind of cool. What do you guys... Everybody seemed to be very excited today about our new 5/4 potential hasty guy. The 5/4/4/4. I'm trying to remember. I don't know. I can't remember off the top of my head what his name is, but.
The legendary dude. It is.
Oh, Surok the Huntcaller.
Huntcaller, yeah. There you go.
It's kind of cool to see a formidable ability and a guy that gets you 2/3 of the way already to that ability. And
I don't know about you. But 5 into 8 is not exactly 2/3 time.
I'm rounding. You know, close, we'll say.
Oh, I see. You're rounding.
Yeah. That's, yes, off the top of my head, yes, I do.
Dude, so, I mean, it's like switching back to player. Adam, despite Adam making no noise. I don't get it.
I'm just quiet. I just don't like randomly just like spurt things out of my mouth because I'm thinking them.
No.
That's probably a good thing.
I think Sorok's okay. Just okay. Like, I think he's a super solid card. I mean, obviously a 5/4 for 4 mana is great. You know, this is like basically Imperial Sor, you know, more or less. You know, you lose the toughness, but you gain the ability to start hasting out dudes. And you know, ideally if you play some 3-drop for 3 the turn before, you know, you can curve right out into a hasty 5/4. You know, and I think that's kind of like the ideal scenario. I think that's not unreasonable in limited. You know, if you're base green, I think you're going to be able to have the beef there, and it's not going to be hard to have a hasty Sorok when he enters the battlefield. But just having like a fast 5/4, you know, it's not evasive. He doesn't have trample. He doesn't have any survivability. In fact, like it, you know, the fact that he's a 5/4, it reads to me like maybe his toughness got reduced because he was just a little too good at some point.
Do you think it reviews like a 5/5? That's kind of what it spelled like when I first read this.
Yeah, like maybe use a 5/5 or like a 6/6 or something like that. Like because the original Serac is a 6/6 trample flash for 5. You know, and this guy feels significantly.
There's no way this guy was a 4-mana 6/6.
Right. So I mean, you know, a 4-mana 5/5. Like start with Imperiosaur and add the ability to randomly give haste, and maybe it was just a touch too good. I don't know. Maybe we'll get the story from Sam Stoddard or somebody else in on a Friday column sometime. But and he's just okay. Like I don't want to build around him in Commander necessarily, but I think he's a very fine Commander card. Just being able to cast like have Serac out, almost any fatty you cast is going to have haste, and that's pretty relevant actually. Like I like him as utility, but not as like kind of like a splashy lead.
You like him just as a friend.
Yeah, he's fine.
How did you not mention that he's on a green card given haste to single? Like that bugs me. Like you could do Ferocious in red, like make this guy red or make him give something more green than haste. Like even if you're moving green haste over into the green color pie, you're doing it in very small amounts. And this card's like all about the haste. Like I don't know, it just seems kind of weird to me.
Like it's a bonus, right? It's like if you already have all this stuff, it gets haste, which like makes sense because I think haste is like secondary in green. It's like a secondary.
Sure, but it's still like an 80-20 or 90-10 split in favor of red. I would say, like red's definitely way dominant on haste.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I don't know. Like I think that if this guy was too good, I would be very surprised. Even at 5/5, I'm surprised he didn't make it at 5/5 because like. When this kind of card is good, like what your format's awesome. You have vanilla 5/5s as a good creatures for 4-mana, like the Hero's Downfall and Ultimate Price that you just reprinted both kill it for super cheap. Chump blockers are interact, like there's just so much going on. So I'm like super surprised that this thing is not a 5/5 or even better. I do expect it will see some play. Being legendary will hurt it quite a bit. It will definitely see play in the mono green deck, like Eugenesis Hydra into this, and the game could just be over. You just like play a Voyaging Satyr and that give that haste, untap your Nykthos, make a million mana, just go off. So I would be very surprised if like this wasn't a 2 of in the mono green decks. It does kill a Siege Rhino, which is a pretty big deal. And it lives through all the 3 damage and -3/-3 effects like Bioblight. So the 4 toughness does matter, but I still think that it will not be like a huge player in Standard. It'll be like, what's a good comparison? It'll probably be like Mantis Rider level of play. Like Mantis Rider was huge for a short while, and now it's just kind of like another card. This card will basically be like another card that sees play, like Mantis Rider is now.
Okay, I had to remind myself about Mantis Rider. Just took a second.
You forgot about Mantis. Mantis Rider was like literally like the best creature in Standard for like a month. And now it's like it sees some play, but it is not, you know, the go-to best thing going on.
Yeah, I mean, I can just talk about all green cards. So I'm going to throw another one, and then I'll let you guys do some picks. Shaman of Forgotten Ways. So I like cards that generate mana. I also like cards that have really bizarre formidable triggers that simulate Biorhythm. So we have Shaman of Forgotten Ways, 2 and a green. It's a 2/3, it's a human shaman, so already not too bad. Tap, add 2 mana and any combination of colors to your mana pool. Spend this mana only to cast creature spells. Okay. And then a crazy formidable of, is it 9 and 2 green, tap, each basically Biorhythm. And I personally love playing Biorhythm a lot, so I was excited to see that come back in an unusual fashion. I'm assuming this is just going to be mainly used as I'm tapping 2 mana to put on my dragons faster.
It's a Biorhythm, except you're not killing yourself with huge delay, which is nice. Biorhythm, like, I definitely just drawn the game because I didn't want to lose or whatever. It had no creatures out, just cast Biorhythm. You cannot do that with this. I guess you could do it. No, there's basically impossible. They would have to... Does this guy check? Does this guy have an intervening if in his formidable? Or is formidable just guaranteed intervening if? Like, is it possible to activate this ability and then get all of your creatures killed and then you die?
If you activate... I'm trying to remember... I know we talked about the rules last time where I had it up where I thought it would still... Damn it.
But this says... Activate each player. I guess I don't know. activate this ability only. It just says activated only. So you can
the ability you can't use it unless you have Formidable, but you can. I mean, I assume if they cast a route in response.
Yeah, if they cast a route or whatever in response, you will kill yourself. So be warned, in Commander, don't get routed or whatever other instant speed. I'm sure there's a bunch of instant speed grass in Commander.
Well, speaking of Commander, what makes this card stand out is Biorhythm is banned in Commander. Like, specifically because of just, like, whoops, you know, nobody has any life and everybody dies or draws or whatever. So, like, this is actually extremely relevant. Like, Biorhythm was not an effect available for a long time in the format, and here it is again. So I'm very curious to see how many people decide, Herder, I'm going to make the Biorhythm deck, and I'm going to tutor this guy out, and I'm going to kill everyone all at once and keep my one indestructible dude. Aren't I clever? See how fast that happens and how often. And yeah, I'm very curious to see if this ends up needing the rules committee to step in and kind of take care of this alternate Biorhythm.
I guess, Adam, is there any other cards in the set that hop out as being, I guess, unfair or that you would be concerned about, say, like, in Commander?
I don't think I've seen one. I'm a little disappointed that Dragonlord Kolaghan's ability kind of doesn't work in Commander. When you're looking for multiples of cards in a graveyard, you're not going to get multiple copies in Commander. So his basically one line of text whenever somebody plays basically a second copy of a card, you know, ding him for 10, just doesn't, you know, it doesn't exist. So when you're evaluating him, that and you take that ability off the table, he just really doesn't really have a lot else going on for him. Giving everybody haste is great, but, you know, it's only part of it. Like, that bonus ability is, like, what helped tip, Dragonlord Dromica. Kind of the ability to go, okay, I'm going to cast Dromica. I know she's going to resolve. Now I'm going to cast this other creature, and it's going to be, something really, really awesome. You know, that type of sequencing where you can kind of dodge the counter spells is relevant in Commander. It will be for forever, as long as people decide islands are the best thing ever. Yeah, I haven't seen anything like problematic.
All right, Conley, do you have one? Otherwise, I was going to dive into black. I had a couple of cards in black that had me kind of excited.
You just said you were going to let us pick some cards.
Yeah, that's why I said Conley's up.
All right, I'll just quickly mention one and let you go to black since you like it like that. I'm going to go with Dragon Lord Ajutai. I'm going to talk about that one because that card's going to see a ton of blades constructed, I'm sure. Another control card. 5 mana, 5/4, flying hexproof for all purposes, because the turn you cast it has hexproof. And then when you attack with it, theoretically you're going to have some counterspell mana up. Theoretically you're going to have some blue-blue counterspell mana up that will counter their spell no matter what, and you're going to be able to protect this relatively easily. You could even theoretically play this with something like untaps it, for example, to just as another counterspell effect, if that is appealing to you. But then the second line of text, or the third line of text, big paragraph about drawing extra cards is just, like, huge. Like, getting impulses off your win condition that also has hexproof is pretty absurd. So I would expect this to kind of be like Progenitus Sphinx was before. Like, that sort of, like, you know, 5-mana win condition. Like, this is just significantly better. Obviously, you have to be playing white with your blue, and you can't be playing blue-black. But blue-black has their own hexproof dragon that actually kind of kicks the crap out of this mouth. Think about it, but that's fine. Just don't run this into Silumgar dot deck, and you'll be good to go.
So, just an interesting note for Brewers. We still have Inspired or whatever the untap mechanic was from, like, Born of the Gods, Journey into Nyx. We have Refocus from Fate Reforged, which just is untap target creature, draw card, and Triton Tackets, which is like untap and they get like +0/+4 and basically get like the ice you down if I block you. So there are plenty of effects in blue and synergies in blue where untapping your creature, especially if you're going to get a benefit from it and protect it from like a burn spell, they're going to go a long way. So I'm kind of excited.
Sorry.
We're on to black, Tom.
Can you hear the cat snoring?
I can't hear, but I do have one card to talk about before we go.
Oh, yeah.
And this card is going to be the card that I'm going to kill as many people as I possibly can in Limited with it. Gudul Lurker. It's a 1/1 for blue. Can't be blocked. don't even try. And it has Megamorph for one blue. So basically, you can play it as a 3/3 and then unmorph it and have a 2/2 unblockable.
And it's a Salamander.
This guy's just going to be super annoying. This is going to be one of those things where, like, oh, you got two of those guys? I'm taking four per turn? Come on. You know.
For what it's worth, if Mono Blue Devotion gets back into Constructed due to whatever that triple blue dude is, Triton, Shorewalker, or something.
The Shorecrasher guy? Shorecrasher Elemental.
Yeah, if that guy propels Mono Blue back into a standard deck, then this little 1/1 unblockable for one guy will 100% be a part of the deck because it just needs cheap, aggressive one-drops that effectively fly. This is obviously better than flying and comes with the upside of being a 2/2 later on in the game if you just have mana lying around. So if Mono Blue makes a comeback, this guy will definitely see play in the standard version, I would imagine.
Yeah, this kind of would fill the role of the 0/1 Evolve guy from the old Blue Devotion decks.
Obviously, Clefairy Raptor is significantly better, but this guy does some things at least and works really well with Biden, Nefasa, etc. Like, he's got some uses.
I like it. We're on the same page, Tony Conley. I dig it.
I'm just going to throw one that I just like from, I guess, the flavor of the name matching with the card itself, and that's Hedonist Trope. Just I don't think has there been any other Magic cards with Hedon, like a Hedonist in it?
I don't even know. What card is Hedonist Trope?
Oh, there is. Oh, there's actually been a few. Sweet. A lot of them are in different languages. But I forgot there was a Saber. So let me just read it for you. It seems like it's expensive. I mean, it's basically it's 2 black and 5, so 7 converted mana. It's enchantment rare. When Hedonist Trove enters the battlefield, exile all cards from target opponent's graveyard. You may play land cards exiled with Hedonist Trove, and you may cast non-land cards exiled with Hedonist Trove. You can't cast more than one spell this way each turn. I just thought it's cool because it exiles a graveyard. Insane. Yeah. I mean, it's expensive, but at least it gives you the ability.
I actually hadn't seen this card yet, and this card reminds me of Kolfner's Plans back in the day, which I had a deck around that I actually top-8 in States with one year. I love that card. That card had way more restrictions to it than this. This, the restrictions are that it costs 7 mana, which is significantly more than 4, and that you're getting your opponent's stuff, so if they're not playing with a good deck, then you don't necessarily get good cards. But being able to both continue to draw off your own deck,
you can't cast more than one
spell this way. So you shoot. Wait, what?
I said, unlike Holfner's Plan, you don't have to skip your draw step. I remember that.
Oh, yeah, exactly. You don't skip your draw step, and the one spell per turn limit is only limited to cards from Hedonist Tome, which means you can still cast 30 cards from your hand in one turn. So you're not restricted to only cast one spell. Holfner's Plan technically restricted you from casting everything except for one card per turn. So I played it with like Rule of Law, and then I would like get out. I would like play Rule of Law as my first card, so my opponent was under the same restriction. Then I would like play a Teferi so that they could only play one spell on their turn and not on mine. And then I would play it on both turns and then just counter their spell every turn until I eventually like used a bounce spell that was sitting underneath like a Venser or something, sitting underneath the Kolfner's Plans to bounce the Kolfner's Plans and recast it and just kept drawing 7. So. But playing one spell per turn was like a huge disadvantage, which is why I had to run Rule of Law to even get close to that being a viable thing. This, like, you're actually casting a ton of extra cards because you're making land drops late in the game, which is pretty big for a control deck, and then you're casting multiple cards per turn. How are you getting this 7 mana card to resolve? I'm not sure, but if you find a way, this seems like a pretty powerful card. Like, if you could sneak this into play, maybe. I don't know if that's possible, but I'm excited for the potential. Tom has hit a saucy one.
There we go. Adam, continue the sauciness.
So one of my favorite cards of all time in Pauper Cube is not Faceless Butcher, who's really good, but it's the help me out here, Conley. It's the guy that you can unmorph it for 3 and double black, and it's Terrors.
What
it
Skin Render?
Skin Render.
Yeah,
and or the skin. I thought Skin Render was the guy.
Skin thinner.
Yeah, Skin Thinner. And
Magic games.
It's a really good card because obviously, typically two for ones. Like you can play it as a 2/1 for two, so it's great for, you know, just general aggressive deck. But you draw it later in the game. You basically set up, kill their biggest thing, and trade with their smallest that's attacking you. It's a really sweet little card. They kind of brought it back with Megamorph. It's nowhere near as powerful, I don't think. But it has a different ability that I like. It's Silumgar Assassin. So it's one and a black for a 2/2. That's its normal mode. But it's a rare, so it comes with some bonuses here. Creatures with power greater than Silumgar's Assassin's power can't block it. So basically, the smaller he is, it's like the Kithkin type ability. He just kind of like slips through. He has a Megamorph for two and a black. And when Silumgar Assassin is turned face up, destroy target creature with power 3 or less than opponent controls. So it kind of lets you set up the situation where, like, you know, somebody has like a 4/4 and they can't attack into you necessarily. But like this guy can flip up, kill something small that ideally can block the assassin, and start punching through for 3 damage. Or you just play him on turn 2, and pretty much anything an opponent plays can't block it unless it's going to trade. You know, you're never going to have an unfavorable interaction if you're attacking with him. More or less is what he reads. So it's not the same, but it feels cool, and I kind of like the Echo throwback.
I like the ability to flip up, kill things. I like its first line of text, whatever. But I hate that its first line of text like makes you feel a little bad about using the Megamorph. Like you have to make your guy bigger, which makes him easier to block theoretically. And like, sure, that's the only way you get this removal spell. But it kind of like has some weird tension there, where it's like, I don't actually want my assassin to get any bigger. I want him to be able to attack past. You know, can he attack past Forcer? I guess he can't.
Is there any dragon? I don't think there's any dragon that has power less than 4. Like this guy may just like ignore, like, okay, cool, like you've got a Serac. I'm still gonna pound you for 3. Like I feel like it's great for the against the decks that just, you know, plan like, okay, cool, I'm gonna drop like a 6 drop and a 7 drop, and you know, by the
time for constructive purposes, I think it'll fit that role just fine. I was mostly just talking about like the feel of the card. It's like if I was a new player, 3/3, 3/3s, but then at that point my guy becomes blockable by your other 3/3, where if I just play it as a 2/1, I have this guy who goes through unblocked. And like obviously we all know that just taking a 2/1 whatever is great, but random pre-release dude doesn't know that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, definitely admit the tension is weird. Like, if I had an already processed kind of like what Skin Thinner can do, like I don't think I'd be as excited about this guy. I'd be confused.
Yeah, whereas on the other side, the white side, you have this like perfectly designed card. You have Hidden Dragon Slayer is its name. Colorless and a white for 2/1. It has Lifelink, an ability that scales well when your creatures get bigger. Megamorph, which makes your creatures bigger. And then its other ability to kill something that's big. It slays dragons, so it kills someone power 4 or greater. The Intrepid Hero, if you will. So like that card's like perfect. Kills a giant thing, makes itself bigger, gains you more life, does everything you want it to do. And then you have this kind of like weird feel bad card on the other side that I just wish they could have like mix and match the abilities a little bit better just to come up with something cooler. Like if it had, I don't know, First Strike or Intimidate or something where you're like happy to flip it, then it changes a little bit. But I don't know. Just my 2 cents. Again, if you don't work, just kidding.
Okay, yes, I have a flavor question for you. So I'm going to ask you the question, then I'll tell you the card that brought this up. When you think of a djinn, you know, the creature type of magic, DJINN, what comes up in your mind?
A genie coming out of a bottle, basically.
Yeah, so a supernatural being of some sort, correct?
Yeah, it's got to fly.
So you've identified supernatural flying. Do you feel that supernatural things can be killed and zombified? Do you think a supernatural thing can be turned to a zombie form of said supernatural thingy?
No, but you could potentially, let's say djinns were depicted as spirits or something like that. I could see like you resurrect a human and then the human is now undead, and then like the undead spirit comes out and is like an undead djinn. So like the djinn comes from something undead rather than turning undead itself. I can see that potentially being a stretch.
Okay, so but the Sassy Spirit. So the card that's prompting this is Silumgar Butcher. It's 4 and a black. It's a creature zombie djinn. It's a common. It's a 3/3. Does not have flying. So it's basically failed all the excellent points that Conley made.
I did not realize that was a djinn. That is a very strange creature type to make this.
Yeah, and it doesn't have flying, which I agree. I'd say not all djinns do. Like, there's been a few in the past that didn't, but in general were big flying things. Exploit. So
they're also not black.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, there's been a handful, like Aku djinn, there's been a handful, but just kind of strange. So exploit, when this creature enters the battlefield, you may sacrifice a creature. When it enters, if it exploits a creature, you give something -3/-3, and it's a 3/3. So in general, it's, I mean, from a limited standpoint, it's not bad, but a zombie djinn just seemed really bizarre to me.
Oh, this is actually very good from a limited standpoint for whatever it is. You're usually, you'll have some fodder lying around if you build your deck right. Even if you don't, this could always be 5 mana, -3/-3, because you could sacrifice itself. Yeah, that is a very strange creature type pairing. I would not have noticed that, only Tom would have, of course, because he's searching for all the creature types. There's also a zombie turtle. I'm all for the zombie turtle.
Ooh, I haven't seen the zombie turtle. Where is that one?
I mean, just back up about the djinn. So Magic, like, the Ifrits and djinns have been, like, the genie types. For Tarkir, like, they introduced, like, basically they were, like, anthropomorphized, like, humanized, more or less. So, like, yeah, it's a djinn, but it's not, like, the same type of, like, mystical, elemental genie type thing. It's more like just, like, you know, a dude with blue skin, like a Vidalkin type race.
Okay, so it's more a subtype, I guess, or a... Okay.
Yeah, it's just to give it, like, a different race for Tarkir rather than reusing, you know... Like, they brought back orcs, and they wanted to have, like, different creature types kind of in all the colors, like, I assume. Like, they have Nagas for some reason. Okay.
Okay. I like odd creature types, so that one struck me as being kind of fun. All right, Adam, do you have another saucy pick? We'll do maybe a few more rounds, and then we can...
More rounds?
What? I think let's go for one more round. I'm going to pick one last saucy pick. You're going to pick one last saucy pick. Colin's going to pick one last
saucy pick. But
we're going to close this out in style.
Middle.
I'm not going to take no for an answer, Tom. Not taking your guff tonight.
I got a guff plan.
Some gumption. Man, there's lots of interesting cards.
Almost if we had like two more rounds to talk about, it'd be perfect.
No, it's it's just different.
There's a time limit. That's almost it.
I think...
I'm going to try to find the worst one, then.
I think probably one of the more interesting cards that's going to kind of fly under the radar for a little bit is Ereshkigal Foremost. So it's 1 and double white for a 2/2 double strike. So just on face value, you're going to hit for 4, trade with anything that has 4 toughness. So it's great. Scales super well with any pump effects like Artful Maneuver, which is a common. It has rebound, so you get it twice. Give something +2/+2. But it's the second ability on Ereshkigal Foremost, I think, is interesting. Whenever Ereshkigal Foremost enters the battlefield or attacks, another target warrior creature you control gains double strike until end of turn. So this is kind of like a de facto warrior lord, right? It cares about warriors. It says, do you have another warrior? If so, cool. Bonus. These types of lords, these guys that want you to have all the tribal guys together, they typically hang around a lot longer in value than you expect, especially like foil copies, because somebody wants to make the warrior deck or somebody wants to have like a green-white warrior commander deck. There are a lot of warriors in Magic, and there's been very few lords. Like Luvisa Cold Eyes is one, and she's like double red and she's all right. Like this is just one of those cards where like if you're building a warrior deck or you plan to have, you know, just like a fun casual warrior deck, this is gonna hurt. It's gonna hit really hard. It affects the battlefield as soon as it hits. So like you can curve out, you know, some 2/2 warrior on turn 2 and smash in for 4 on the next turn. And then when you attack, you've got 2 double striking dudes on the turn after that. It's just a very quick and efficient way to push some damage out. And it's kind of one of the few ways to grant double strike as well, which is a very strong ability. for a creature in combat. So I'm excited to see kind of like if there is a warrior deck, like does Erishin Foremost show up? Like, I don't think it's necessarily constructed. Like, I'm having a hard time seeing that, but I know somebody's going to put this in some commander deck and just smash somebody over the head with a double striking commander out of nowhere, and it's going to be pretty cool.
Well, it's got to be deck because Anafenzo is sitting right next to it. Jutai Exemplars, that's a monk. No. Okay, never mind.
Yeah, there's a quite a mix of...
I always hate that. They make the set about a specific creature type, and they have soldiers next to warriors. Like, first of all, 99% of the damn audience couldn't tell you the difference between a soldier and a warrior. Other than maybe warriors have a slight Asian affiliation. That's all. When I think of the two things, they're the same, right? There's people that fight in wars, like, by definition. So, like, the fact that Anafenzo sitting right next to it would be a potential awesome candidate for this warrior deck, and she instead is a spirit soldier and might not see play, even though she's kind of a sweet design, saddens me. Because the warrior deck, I think, just needed a little more help than we've seen so far. It still has a chance, to be fair, but I think the warrior deck was, like, 75% of the way to being tier 1.5-ish. And, like, this guy, I just don't think he does it for Constructed. He's, like, okay, but he is not, you know, Mr. Dependable necessarily. He has a little bit of the, the one from Avacyn Restored. I'm trying to think of its name. It came into play and gave Double Strike effectively because it paired up with something.
Oh, the like the Paladin, whatever.
Yeah, I don't remember. It's Silverblade Paladin, I think.
Yeah, Silverblade Paladin.
Yeah, like that guy saw a decent amount of play. This will see significantly less because you have to play it in Warrior Tribal. Otherwise, it doesn't do anything. So we'll have to see if Warrior's get a little bit more help, I think, to go with this. But it's a sweet card. I just don't know if it's super strong or not. But yeah.
Maybe you know what card is a warrior, reasons. Conley?
The 2-1 lifelink.
Well, yes, the 2-1 lifelink, which is great. But also Zergo Helm Smasher.
Yeah, but that's a 5-man. I mean, I understand that giving it double strikes obviously the nuts. That's like a 5-man unplayable dude most of the time. So I'm not too excited about it. Has 8,
and it's indestructible in your turn.
That's true. But unfortunately, Abzan Charm doesn't give a shit if it's indestructible on my turn.
Wait, doesn't Abzan Charm care about toughness? Like, 3 or more? Zergo has 2. Until he kills something.
Oh, Zergo has 2 toughness? I thought he was an X3.
Yeah, he's an X2 until he kills something. He's a 7-2. And then every creature he kills, he gets a +1/+1 counter, I think. Or whenever he hits an opponent.
Wait, so that means they just have to throw a guy in the way. and then they Abzan Charm. No, Abzan Charm checks power. I was right. Toughness is suspension field.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, makes sense.
Abzan Charm and X-Earth power, yeah. You had me confused for a minute because I was like, I don't think Abzan Charm hits Corsair Crucifix. It would be just like the best card in Constructed.
Yeah.
Tom, where are you at, buddy?
This is one, I guess.
You want to tell us how much you love Sign of Ugin a little bit more?
Sign of what? I kind of like the Haven of the Spirit Dragon. I like Funky Lands.
Why wasn't that land in the last set? So, like, the last set had very few dragons. The few dragons it did have were gold. And it had Ugin. This card would have been awesome in the limited format. You were like, oh, I have an Ugin. I have the dream of getting a Haven and then blah, blah, blah. Or if I have a dragon, I really need to cast it, but it's 2 colors. Haven can help me out. And then the storage land would have made perfect sense in this set. I mean, I understand there's storylines and all that BS, but I'm just saying that, like, mechanically, swap those things up. Yeah, come on.
And from a designer standpoint, Conley, for you, I really like the monument cycle of artifacts that we have. Is I like cheap artifacts that can, you know, help smooth out mana bases. It seemed a little weird that all of them had basically almost the same triggered ability. It was just different colors on
your screen. They're literally exactly this. Yeah, it's an activated ability for what Tom's alluding to. 3 mana artifacts, they all produce, they tap for 2 colors, allied colors, blue, white, blue, black, black, red, etc. And then you pay 4 colors and both of our flying dragon until the turn that is the 2 colors. I don't really get it. Like, I get it that they're monuments, but how are monuments coming to life and turning into dragons? Those are much cooler than monuments. You should probably do something about that. Also, it's just kind of lazy. I don't know. I like, when I read the first one of these, I was like, oh, sweet. This thing's using no 4 4 Flying Dragon, and then I started reading the second one, and my eyes skimmed to the 4-4 part, and then I skimmed to the next card and saw the 4-4, and I was like, wait, they're all... Like when I read... one of my favorite cycles of all time is the Time Spiral Totem cycle.
Yeah, they were awesome. Those totems
were awesome and constructed. They were 3 mana for a single color. They were like, you know, we had Signets flying around doing insane things for forever at 2 mana, producing multiple colors. These were significantly more fair, and yet they had these abilities that just made them really, really cool. And granted, most of them were not constructed playable. You had, like, Phyrexian Totem, which saw some play. The white one definitely did not. What did the red one make? The red one made a 4-eyes giant, so that one did not see play. But they were all really fun and limited, I remember that. And there were a couple, I think, that saw play and constructed. One made a Psychotalk Totem, which was...
Well,
Chronotalk Totem, which is... It was embarrassing for everybody. But just the idea that, like, these things all make unique, really fun, interesting things meant a couple things. A, it meant that everyone gave you a different experience. And B, it meant that every single one had a chance to make it and construct it. It wasn't like, well, because this one sucks, the rest of them suck. And that's exactly what this cycle is. Like, no deck is playing in constructed is playing 6 mana and make turn into a 4-4, I don't think. Especially when you can instead just be drawing a card, which is generally going to be better. So you kind of damn the whole cycle when you make them kind of weak like this. But I don't know. They're all fun. They're insane and limited. Take these and limited. They're actually good. I thought that the banner, they were called banners, right? The 3 mana ones from cons.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are basically unplayable in constructed, or in limited, excuse me, because they came down when you wanted to be playing a morph. But now that we're in a different world, that might not necessarily be true. And these guys actually have a huge impact on the game later on. Like, drawing a card is whatever, but these, like, 4-4 flyer, nobody's going to argue with you that is a good limited thing, especially one that doesn't necessarily die to sorceries because of removal. So these, unlike banners, definitely play unlimited. They should be strong and win you games.
The thing that jumped out to me when I saw their abilities, Conley, was that it's kind of... it was a conscious choice. Like, I think it makes more flavor sense if each one kind of makes a more representative dragon for its tribe. Mm-hmm. But the fact that they're all just a flat 6 mana, two of that tribe's dragon tribe's colors make a 4-4 flying, kind of takes away from some of the memory complexity and board complexity that happens. Because it's like if you have 5 different, it's like those, it's like the back to like the key runes from like Ravnica and. Gatecrash. It's like you've got to remember 10 different little colorless dudes that can become, you know, 10 different creatures.
Yeah, I mean, to a certain extent, but like if I just played a card from my hand, you either have to know what that card does or you have to pick it up and read it. So you are already under the pressure of knowing all the cards in the limited format or picking them up and reading them. So, like, if the green one of these made a 6-2, and the black one, like, let's say they all cost the same to activate, so you don't need to memorize that. They just make different size dragons that are, like, appropriate. Like, the white-blue one is a 2-7 or something interesting, or the white-green one is a 2-7, maybe. The white-blue one's a 3-5, something like that. Like, they make different size dragons. They're kind of, like, sort of the color pair. It just makes it, like, a more evocative type of a cycle to me, in my opinion. Whereas, like, as is, they come out really strong. The first one of these you read, you're like, whoa, this is a big effect. Like, I'm really happy to see these monument things. And then you kind of get let down as you continue reading them. And that was my biggest bummer. I mean, they're, like I said, they're all going to be strong and limited. People might play them and construct it if they're kind of crazy. But they're just, to me, they did not deliver in the, like, excited, I want to see dragons, you know. I'm just ranting a bunch today.
All right. That was our last round of cards.
You are our last round of cards.
Oh, that's what she said. I'm branching myself randomly. People can see it. I have to.
Yeah, they can definitely see it. I can see it. That's more important. The subtle shift from dragons being notorious 5-5 flyers down to 4-4s, which I always associated with angels, but now, like, dragons and angels are the same size, basically. Because there's a million 4, like, these guys make 4-4s, the tokens from Sarkhan are 4-4s, Sarkhan himself turns into 4-4. Like, dragons being 4-4s is a real thing these days, and it's kind of weird to think about. I don't know if anybody else caught that.
Just kind of flavor-wise to you, it just doesn't seem quite...
Well, like growing up, whenever somebody said there's a dragon in the set, or like, yeah, first pick that, it's a dragon, it always meant it was a 5/5 for six. Like, that's what in my mind when a dragon is, the 5/5 flyer for six. And so, like, being 4/4 is four, act is like a weird concept to me.
So what was the first dragon, too, that was really disappointing? Because, I mean, there have now been a bunch of weird, even very tiny dragons. We have dragon eggs and everything on up.
The first dragon that was disappointing to me, like, ever, lifetime?
Yeah.
I don't remember. I'm not like Brian Kibler here. I don't remember my like first sexual encounter with a dragon either. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't ask at all about that. I don't care if you're a furry or a dragon. No, I'm just saying,
I don't have a chart sitting next to my desk where I just keep dragon related activities. Like, here's my dragon bucket list. I need to jump out of
a plane with a dragon. Diary somewhere in there. You know, you have your.
I'm just saying. It was May 3rd, 2007, when I first saw my first shitty dragon, and I was disappointed. Like, which I don't remember. It was probably when I first saw the green Jugen. That would probably be the first poopy dragon. That guy bummed me the hell out, because it was like, here's our first chance getting green and awesome dragon, and it cost triple pip for no effing reason, and its ability was just, it needed other creatures to be in play, which is something you always want your 5/5 flying dragon to do, and then it like made those creatures bigger. It was just like terrible.
What about Elder Landworm? Were you disappointed when you first saw that?
That was before my time. That was before my time, and Tom, I already said quit dropping sexual innuendo.
It was in 4th edition.
Yeah, no, it was before my time. I started in after 8th edition.
Oh, wow. Okay. Different legends. So, bam. But to answer Kai T, the question there about how many 5/5 dragons there's been, there's actually been 39 with Power 5.
Well, I mean, it's not even just about the dragons.
Two or three cards, like spells or other creatures that make 5/5 tokens.
Yeah, like Day of the Dragon, Form of the Dragon, both those right there, those are two of the most iconic dragon cards. One says you get a bunch of 5/5 dragons, that's the Day of the Dragons. And the other one says your life total goes to 5 and you shoot things for 5. That's what a dragon is. Like, literally, Form of the Dragon tells you what the form of a dragon is. It is not 4/4. What are you typing, Tom?
Kai wanted to clarify his question that when he asked about there being multiples, he meant about your encounters with sexual encounters with dragons. I was going to reply that it's more than 39.
The weirdest part about this is my first college roommate actually like had weird dragon fantasies, and he would tell me about them all the time. I'm obviously not saying his name or anything, but he would like tell me these like sexual fantasies he had about dragons. It was very, very
strange. Is he write fan fiction about everything?
Yeah, there was he was into half dragon people like coming back. It was like really strange.
Oh, that's so gross when people are into anthropomorphic stuff. I'm sorry. You need help.
I mean, he was a cool dude. He was like, he's the type of roommate where you didn't have to worry about your stuff being stolen ever. And like,
unless it was a dragon with a hole in it, then it might be gone.
Well, sure. I mean, I didn't have any of this. But I'm just saying, he was like a legit roommate. He never left the room, and every once in a while, you know, it got a little annoying, but whatever. It was legit.
Where's my Puff the Magic Dragon that I had as a kid?
He went back home after one semester because he couldn't stand being in a social setting. So there you go.
Well, that's kind of... Well, or he had to get back to his dragons. Potentially.
I mean, yeah, if you believe dragons are real, yes, probably.
I'm waiting for Adam to stop the train wreck and
there's no way Adam can stop this. This thing is going.
You are just going too much, Tom.
What's that?
But I do want to point out that we've pretty much hit an hour, and
cool. We
probably start to tie these loose ends up.
Cool. And put the
look. Adam would say that. Look at this smug look on Adam's face. He's just like, yes, I'm the father. I shall direct you to behave. Why do you have the apple again? Put the apple away.
Damn it. I'm waiting for Adam to start counting me. 1, 2, 3, Tom, it's a timeout.
No, don't count up because there's always another number. You count down because then there's a final ending.
Oh, then it can be like 4.
With parenting skills from Adam.
Yeah.
I will take parenting help anywhere I can get it.
We're fond of the 3 count. We'll sometimes use the 5 count when some additional time is needed to obviously cease behavior activity.
Well, especially, I mean, Adam, right, so we start having more than one where they could literally start like choking each other and stuff. It gets to be a little interesting.
I mean, if one of my kids murders the other, like, I'm not sure how fast it'll turn from like absolute despair into kind of like a, you know, really sadistic relief, but I don't anticipate that happening.
We've hit a new low on the podcast. We're discussing the potential release of murdering Adam.
All right, Adam, people want to email us, most likely because they're angry, but they want to email us. Where can they do that, Adam?
Well, if you want to email probably Tom, who checks the email regularly, you can email all of us as a show at mtgpotpourri@gatheringmagic.com. You can also hit the show Twitter at mtgpotpourri, both of which Tom is all over, loves the tweeting and the talking and the speaking of our behalf without consulting us. It's the best.
Am I supposed to consult? I guess I never thought about that. I have it on my phone.
Why would you consult us when you can just immediately respond whatever you want? That feels so much more gratifying, doesn't it?
I don't put anything bad, I don't think. I should verify that before I say it, promise it.
But. You put hashtag dick doc.
That was not me. That was somebody else that I retweeted it.
Of course you retweeted it. This is what we're talking about, Tom. But so if you want to yell at me because I say nothing and I didn't have an angry episode this week, you can find me on Twitter, the_Stibs, STYBS. You can email me at stibs@gatheringmagic.com. You can also check out my weekly series, Command Tower, on dailymtg.com, and you can email me commander articles and decks there. I'm around.
Oh, God. Kai, thank you for mentioning the Dragon Flesh Torch. Oh, for Conley's... Dragon Flesh Torch.
He's long gone. That was like eight years ago. Long gone.
That is disgusting, but perfect. If you want to tweet...
All right, we're closing the show, Tom.
Okay, tweet me. I'm at PSG Reader, Conley.
Adam gave his whole spiel. He pulled out business cards. He was like handing them. He was walking. He had a loudspeaker, and he was like, "Oh, good,
he's got the car with the plaques on the side and the speakers."
Yeah,
I just don't.
I have this fucking Twitter account.
You're gonna be having some articles and stuff coming up.
Yeah, I have stuff. I have so I'm also on the Twitter sphere at Conley8181 in total. If you want to tweet at me. Also, if you're interested in Deck Doctor submissions, you can send them to that Twitter account with hashtag Deck Doctor. But I will not be looking at any for a couple weeks, so you might want to wait a little bit because I'm working on the current submission, which videos will be going up for on channelfireball.com, articles also on channelfireball.com, articles on tcgplayer.com, and that's everything. Twitch is Conley81 as well on Twitch, and I should be streaming a couple times in the next month or so we'll see.
And I guess if people remember Old Monday Night Magic, we used to have the Don't Google This segment.
Stop.
Wait, Tom, I'm going to trump this and tease you with something that is going to burn you to death.
What's that?
The real identity behind Fart Pillow.
Really? Fart Pillow? Oh, God, don't Google Dragon Fleshlight.
The person who emailed us when you were big on email?
Yes, okay.
Well, yeah.
Centering myself here a little bit.
You just did that, didn't you, Tom? You just did what they asked you to do in comments.
Yeah, sorry.
This is what we've come to. I hope we've all learned a lesson here, particularly you, Tom.
I wish I had more Diet Dr. Pepper. Bad taste in my mouth.
Go eat your bowl of cereal.
Golden Grahams. My entire household is addicted to Golden Grahams right now.
Golden Grahams are a nut, dude.
It is really, we're talking infant, I should say toddler now, but she is, doesn't care how much she is, but Golden Grahams, she will eat like an adult-sized bowl. It's fairly impressive. All right, Adam.
Diabetes, Tom. That's called diabetes.
That's true. It can happen at any age. I have the apple again. I'm sorry. So I'm going to put that back. Adam, I'll let you wrap it up because I'm not very good at wrapping up the show.
Which is why I have a challenge.
I think we just did a wrap.
Okay, great. Yep. Well, Conley, Adam, thank you. What do you guys think? I greatly enjoyed having the video component to this.
We have no idea what this is going to look like, what the final product is going to look like. We'll probably have to spruce it up a little bit.
Oh, yeah, but it's just, I mean, just for the, I guess, the interactivity of discussing, talking, it seemed more. I liked it.
Sure. And I actually have a really poopy internet connection this week because my cable is out. So next week it'll be better, and I won't have the slow robot noises.
Do you guys want me to grab? I mean, we're really at the end. I can grab Smushy snoring over on the couch or on the.
why do you have a second chair right there? Who are you planning to have guest host with?
This is the director chair.
Oh, is that where
I think Tom. Wrap up the show. I'll close out now. So if you're watching this and it's a YouTube clip and you like kind of seeing us do these things like Tom threatening with a chair and
I'm just holding it up.
His cat finally being a robot. If you love all of these things, let us know. Tweet at us at MTGPotpourri. Send us an email, MTGPotpourri@gatheringmasters.com. Let us know you want the video and we'll make it happen.
Yeah, because we don't really know how it's going to record, but we can... I mean, there are programs that do this, but as Kylie mentioned at the start of the show, I just don't know what gets recorded and actually posted to YouTube for this. I'm not exactly sure, but we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Okay, Adam, it was a ton of fun. And everybody, thank you that joined in. So I'll say hello to our live listeners. So Kai and Alex, glad you could join us and take me to a horrible place on Google Images, and join us maybe even next week, as I am pumped again for podcasting, as MTG Potpourri number 25 is in the bag.
Peace.
Stop the broadcast. This may cut us all off. I don't know. I'm just going to hit it.